Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello and welcome to The Sidebar, presented by True Crime Daily, taking you inside the courtrooms of high-profile and notorious cases from across the country. I'm your host, Joshua Ritter. I'm a criminal defense lawyer based in Los Angeles and previously an LA County prosecutor for nearly a decade. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Joshua Ritter ESQ or at joshuaritter.com. We are recording this on Friday, February 9th, 2024. In this week's episode, the latest on the Delphi murders case, as the suspected killer, Richard Allen, has his attorneys reinstated after months of delays in the highly anticipated trial. Plus, the parents of an OnlyFans model who was charged with fatally stabbing her boyfriend have been arrested after allegedly attempting to destroy evidence. But first, a landmark verdict as the mother of the Oxford High School mass shooter has been convicted on four counts of involuntary manslaughter for the lives taken by her son that tragic day. Today we are joined by Anjanette Levy, a Emmy-nominated reporter, legal correspondent, host on the Law and Crime Network, and a friend of the show. Anjanette, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Josh. I'm really excited to be here.
Oh, good. I'm looking forward to this, too, because I know you follow these cases so closely. And these are some big moments in some of these cases that we're going to be talking about. And I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on them. So let's jump right in. First, we go to Detroit, Michigan, where it's hard to imagine a trial more closely watched by legal analysts and parents alike than the recent conviction of a mother of a school shooter for her failure to intervene in her son's actions. Jennifer Crumbley, the mother of Oxford school shooter Ethan Crumbley, faced four counts of involuntary manslaughter for the deaths of four students who were killed in the massacre. Prosecutors spent weeks meticulously highlighting the actions of Jennifer Crumbley the day of the shooting, criticizing Crumbley for not taking the opportunity to remove her son from school after a teacher uncovered a disturbing drawing and school officials called a conference with the boy's parents. The jury foreperson recently spoke with media outlets claiming that for her, far more problematic was the mother's failure to keep the gun properly secured from the child. Evidence in the trial included footage of Crumbley firing the weapon at a shooting range with her son the last time the weapon was seen before the fatal attack. Crumbley is scheduled to be sentenced in April of this year and could face up to 15 years in prison. She has already been in custody for 2 years since the time of her arrest. Meanwhile, her husband, James Crumbley, will face trial for the same four counts next month. And Jeanette, like I said, I know you follow this closely. I first want to know, what was your reaction to this verdict? Was this surprising to you, or did you see this one coming?
I was a little surprised because I thought when they went home the first night after deliberating, I thought, Maybe it'll be a hung jury, because I could see how if you're a parent, you could think, well, you know, if it were my kid, am I really going to be held responsible if my kid does something that I think is unthinkable and that my kid wouldn't do? But then again, you had him at school with these drawings and you gave him a gun. Even if you say, oh, I bought it as a gift and we were taking him to the range and we didn't think he was going to put it in his book bag and take it to school. So I wasn't completely surprised. When they said they had a verdict, you knew it wasn't going to be a hung jury, because then they would have said, they would have brought the jury out and said there was a hung jury and that they were sending them back in or there was a mistrial. So you knew they weren't going to find her more than likely not guilty. I mean, there were four students dead, and it just looked terrible that you show up to school after being called and say you're being told there's an issue with your son. He's got these drawings. But then you're like, instead of talking to your kid and saying, OK, like I just put myself in her shoes and I think to myself, I would have had my kid brought down and I would have said, okay, what's going on? Or I would have taken him home and we would have sat down in the living room, or I would have taken him out for ice cream and I would have been like, what is going on? Like, tell me what's going on. That is so serious. That is not like a joking matter. And I even know at my son's school, if something like that had happened, there wouldn't have been any sending him back to school or sending him back to class. I mean, he's in elementary school. They would have taken that very seriously. And so I'm not completely shocked. And the foreperson had told some media outlets, including the Today Show, that Jennifer Crumbly was really the last person to be around that gun and should have had it secured. And when you own guns, you do have a responsibility, especially when you have children in the house, to make sure they're secured and to ensure that your kids don't have ready access to them, especially when you have a child who is making claims like this and saying things about things flying around, whether it was months before or not. I mean, he's literally telling his parents, like, I need help. And you're saying suck it up and giving him a melatonin or whatever. To me, it's just nuts. I mean, I know a lot of people are ignorant about this stuff, but come on, your kid is saying I need help.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously the jurors saw that way. I will admit, I did not see this coming. I agreed with you. I thought after that first day, you know, they're going to take the entire week and then they're going to come back and say they're hung, because it's such a difficult question, as for all the reason that you've pointed out. And that's why it's funny to me, because a lot, you know, people who follow this, we've all been talking about it, all the ins and outs and back and forth. And it seems like the jurors, like you pointed out, were most concerned on the fact that she was the last adult to handle that gun beforehand. And it's almost like they just made a very kind of logical progression of, you have a troubled child, you have a gun in the home, you're the last one who had it, you didn't secure it properly, mm-hmm. and therefore he went out and did this horrible, horrible thing. Sounds like it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. I mean, you had a kid who was basically drawing this stuff out at school, and yet you bought him a gun for Christmas to use at the range, you say, but then you didn't make sure that thing was locked up. Yeah. So I think you probably are, you know, in some respects, I kind of look at it, this was the first case where this has happened, criminal case at least, right. Where a parent was found, you know, liable. But in some ways, this screams more of like civil liability to me. But obviously, I think that there were so many bad facts in this case regarding the parents, you know, just having more interest in doing a lot of other things. I'm not saying they didn't love their son, but it just seems like a lot of other stuff was going on in their lives that took priority over their son's mental health and, of course, making sure that gun was locked up.
Yeah. This case obviously made news for several reasons. It made news because it's another school shooting. It was an awful moment in history. It made news because they charged the parents for the first time, like we've talked about many times. But I also think one of the main reasons people are concerned with this is they want to know what happens now. It's hard to imagine a case in recent history where people are asking the question about the potential ripple effects of this verdict. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that. Do you think this case is kind of an outlier, distinguished by the facts, or do you think that we might see more prosecutors being more aggressive about this in regards to either parents or teachers or guardians moving forward from here?
I mean, I think it certainly could set a precedent. If there's another school shooting, possibly they go back, you know, maybe they think, well, in Michigan, they went looking to see what was going on with the child, and then they went to see what was going on with the parents. And that's what they did here. And so that might happen again. I mean, I kind of think back to Sandy Hook. Would they have done that in that case had Adam Lanza not killed his mother?
Yeah.
Maybe. Because remember, she bought the gun for him, too. Yeah. So that was a, you know, horrific. All these things are horrific. So, you know, that was different, obviously, because he killed himself. I mean, that was very well thought out by this child. Like, he killed his mother, he killed himself, and then destroyed his computer so they couldn't find a lot of evidence. So I think it does kind of set a precedent. This may be an outlier in that maybe you don't have parents of other school shooters who are doing things like giving a child who has had mental health issues a gun and having him have access to it. I mean, if you're going to have a gun in your house, and I can say this because I have guns in my house, not because I want to, but because they are my husband's, we have a safe and yeah. It has a thing, you know, a combination, like nobody can get into that thing unless you yeah. have the combination. It's a very secure thing. And those guns are never laying around, you know?
No. I mean, it's to the point that we have laws that gun manufacturers won't sell weapons without some sort of securing device. Every time you purchase a gun, it comes along with some sort of gun lock or something
yes.
that you're expected to use. And I know that, you know, that may vary how people protect their weapons in the home, but it sounds like, obviously, in this case, they didn't do enough that he was able to have access to it being a minor child. And it sounds like that's what the jurors were focused on. So perhaps that may be, like you said, in the Sandy Hook case, those facts were very similar. Perhaps that may be something that's kind of a deciding factor moving forward. But this isn't the end of it, because now James Crumbly is going to go on trial.
I think he's worse off than Jennifer. Well, first of all, I just want to say, like, I mean, as a public service announcement, most law enforcement departments, police departments, sheriff's offices, if you want a gun lock, if you have a gun, those places, a lot of times they have them to hand out yeah. to the public free of charge, first of all. Second of all, if you have guns in your house, like, buy a safe. It's yeah. much less expensive to buy a gun safe that is secure with a, you know, on it than to have something like this happen. But James Crumbly, he's the one that actually purchased the gun. He's the one telling his son in text messages to suck it up and giving him a melatonin or whatever. And I just think he could be in a worse spot than his wife. So, you know, maybe I'm wrong about that, but I will just have to see how the evidence comes out. But just the fact that you're buying a handgun for a kid, come on, like a handgun. Yeah. Like I lived in Wisconsin. That was where I lived for my first reporting job. And people up there, they hunt. I mean, they take their kids hunting, but it's like with these long guns and yeah. you have to supervise your child. Giving a child a handgun is yeah. really dumb. I mean, I'm yeah. sorry. Like, it's just stupid. You know, it's not like you were taking him to the shooting range. Fine. There are different cultures surrounding this in different parts of the country, but I just don't think it's a very smart thing to do.
No. And obviously the jurors agreed with you. And like you said, it's more than just, you know, like you said, all people who own a weapon should have that properly secured at home, especially if you have children in the home. And yes. especially if you have children who have demonstrated they're dealing with a mental health crisis that may include violence. I mean, one of the things that was pointed out is that they sat there in that meeting with the school talking about the troubling things their child was doing and didn't inform them that, by the way, we have a weapon in the house.
Right. How about hey, Jen, or hey, James, hey, where's that gun? Like, do you know where that gun is? Like, I don't get it. Like, I don't get it. And if my kid, and I get that not a lot of people are informed about this stuff. A lot of people are not. I mean, Josh, we see such horrific, horrible things in our jobs. I mean, so we are very probably like hyper aware of this stuff. But you have to kind of like, you know, if my kid is saying something like that, I am going to be darn sure he literally cannot get into the gun safe. And I'd probably be going to my husband and being like, I want that thing out of the house. Like, I want that safe out of the house now. Figure it out. Like, you know, if our kid is going down to the psychiatric unit of the local children's hospital and we're fixing this now.
One last topic I wanted to ask you about this, and I agree with you about James Crumbly. In my view, she had the stronger case as far as the defense,
because
she could point toward him being, he's the one that bought it. The gun was kind of his thing with Ethan. I was kind of out of it. obviously the jurors didn't feel that way, but that's the defense she was trying to make. And James doesn't have those same defenses. My question, though, is he is getting a separate trial. He's getting new jurors. He is getting new attorneys. He's getting a whole different argument. Things could turn out differently. No one is saying this is a slam dunk. What do you think is going to be the reaction if he gets acquitted of this? Now you have the mother convicted and the father acquitted, and they both seem to share culpability.
I mean, it could be very interesting. Who knows what his attorneys are going to do? And, you know, I will say, I hate to be critical of people, but her attorney, and at some points I'm like, was this an act? You know, yeah. This whole like, I don't know how to pronounce cache. I'm calling it a cache of guns. And oh, look at me. I'm a mess throughout this whole case. And my leaning tower of pizza of files. Is this kind of an act? Because then in her closing, all she said, I could be her. You've seen all my flaws, you know, and all of this stuff. I'm like, maybe this whole thing was a shtick so that she could later in closing say, look, none of us are perfect and I could be her. But maybe his attorneys they've got some rabbit they're going to pull out of the hat. Maybe there's something he's going to say if he gets on the stand that will show that, I thought Jennifer had the gun locked up. I don't know. Like, she was the last one to have it. How am I supposed to know? You know, like, who knows? He may throw her under the bus.
In all my years of doing trials, the only guarantee I can give you is there's no guarantees. And that I don't care how true, how strong you feel your case is. You go in there and things happen and jurors see things different ways and arguments are made and the judge makes decisions that no one anticipated and things just turn out differently. I mean, that's not to say that our criminal justice system is a crapshoot, but I'm just saying that you cannot be guaranteed any kind of resolution, how these things are going to turn out. So, well, like I said, we're going to be talking about it for a few months more and probably beyond that as his case is approaching.
Calling all pop culture enthusiasts.
Are you obsessed with all things celebrity?
Do you live for the drama, the laughs, and the unexpected moments that unfold on social media?
Then you're going to want to tune in to the Comments by Celebs podcast.
Join us 3 times a week as we deep dive into every aspect of pop culture.
Whether it's dissecting the latest trends or just chatting about your favorite celebs, Comments by Celebs has you covered.
We have new episodes out every week. Follow and listen to Comments by Celebs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's turn to Indianapolis, Indiana, where Indiana's higher court has released their opinion on a number of motions filed by the suspected killer of 2 Delphi teens. Richard Allen, who has been charged with the murder of Abby Williams and Libby German, has been granted the opportunity to have his original legal counsel reinstated following their abrupt dismissal by a trial court judge last year. In the ruling, the court justice noted that the trial judge did not have the authority to disqualify Allen's attorneys without considering other options, despite the alleged evidence leaks and gag order violations. While the court allowed Allen to retain his original counsel, his request to remove the trial judge was denied. Allen's defense team also filed a motion this week to have criminal charges dismissed on the basis of allegedly destroyed evidence. Get this, this week's motion claims someone destroyed multiple interviews recorded between February 14th and 20th of 2017. These interviews, according to the defense, could play a vital role in proving Allen's innocence. A hearing is scheduled for February 12th. Finally, Allen's request for the trial to commence within 70 days was also denied, with the court citing Allen's failure to file the request with the trial court. Now the fiasco of Allen's legal counsel has been resolved. The trial is ostensibly on track to begin in October. Okay. And Jeanette, first talk to us about this back and forth battle about his defense team. What is the significance of all of this? Why was the judge trying to kick him off? Why was he asking for them back? Fill us in.
Well, a friend of one of the attorneys leaked graphic crime scene photos to podcasters and YouTubers. And those photos ended up on the internet, of course. And how, you know, when things get on the internet, Josh, you, as you know, They're there forever. I'm sure somebody, if they went digging deeply enough, they could find these awful, awful photos showing these poor girls murdered horrifically. And so this friend went to the law office, took photos of the photos, and then leaked them to somebody. So the judge, as a remedy, said, well, these guys have to get off the case. And so she came out and said, well, they, you know, she came out after a in chambers meeting with those lawyers one day, and she informed everybody they've withdrawn. Well, they were like, no, we didn't. You're saying we withdrew. We didn't want to withdraw. And Richard Allen wanted to keep those lawyers. He believes in this defense team, and he felt that they shouldn't have been removed by Judge Gall. So he took it to the high court. The high court agreed, and he was allowed to keep his defense team was reinstated. Judge Gall, I'm sure, did not like that her decision was overturned by the Supreme Court, because this is a high profile case. So to me, it makes her look bad, like she really screwed up. And so it gets sent back to her. And now the prosecution wants these attorneys, they want some sort of sanctions against them. They filed for this, and they're asking for that hearing to be delayed because they're saying, we don't have counsel for this. We haven't had time to prepare for this hearing on the 12th. We just got back on the case. So it's a big mess.
Yeah.
Richard Allen wanted Judge Gall off the case. I'm sure that made her mad too. The high court said, no, we're not going to do that. So so the case is back with Judge Gall as it always was. But I just think it's looked very inept. Plus, the charges are not going to get dismissed. First of all, that's not going to happen, in my opinion. I will, you know, have egg on my face if that happens. But just because they deleted these interviews, which is insanity to me, even if they were on tape, there should be a typed up transcript as well. You know, they're saying this is exculpatory evidence that could help Richard Allen in his defense. There should be another record of this somewhere. And if there isn't, then that is a huge mistake. So I don't think the charges are going to get tossed because of that. But it's just another thing with this case that looks like it's been mishandled.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were talking about this a little bit before we began, that it seems like you see this pattern of these really high profile national attention type cases that happen to take place in these smaller jurisdictions. And I don't want to get hate mail from people saying that they can't handle big cases in small towns. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that sometimes it seems as though everybody can't get out of their own way when it's a big case that they know everyone is paying attention to, and they start to do things differently than they normally would have. And it leads to all these types of mistakes that you're talking about, which the tragic result of all of that is you've got a very important case here about two murdered children that's now got all of this noise and nonsense surrounding it. The judge, I'm just going to weigh in on these things really quickly, but the judge refusing to allow a defendant to have his own attorneys of his choosing when those attorneys are saying, we want to be his lawyer, is nearly unheard of. It's constitutional
insane.
Right. Now,
well,
that doesn't mean that a judge, right, yeah. It doesn't mean a judge can't find some extenuating circumstance to say she's not going to allow that, but this didn't seem to rise to that level. So you're right, goes to the Supreme Court, they agree with both what you and I are saying, send it back down, and now you do have a situation where you've got these attorneys who know the judge wanted them kicked off for essentially being inept.
Right.
And they've got a judge that are they going to feel like they're going to get a fair shake out of this whole thing? Is the defendant going to feel that way?
I
think she should have recused herself, but she's still on the case.
Yes.
And then
I agree
right.
with you. And can I just say, Josh,
please.
Like the Delphi, Indiana, I just Googled it. The population of Delphi, Indiana is 2,972, according to the 2021 numbers. That is a very small town.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is not the type of place that deals with a lot of homicide cases.
Correct.
And you add in the fact that this was two young girls, around Valentine's Day. This scared the daylights out of that community. You've got these grieving families. You've got national attention on it. I'm sure this would have been a lot for any jurisdiction to handle.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you bring in the feds, you get all these different cooks in the kitchen, you know, to handle this case. It's a big deal. And I mean, they brought in ISP, Indiana State Police, of course, first. That's what a lot of these, I mean, I covered cases in Indiana when I worked in local news. So they always bring in Indiana State Police first because they have more expertise in handling homicide investigations. But then they bring in the feds. And so you get all these cooks in the kitchen and everybody's got a finger in it somewhere and doing something. And so I just think that these things tend to turn into a mess. And I do think that Judge Gall, she and the prosecutor are kind of looking a little bit like sour grapes here with this like motion for sanctions because of the photographs. I mean, if you're a lawyer, Josh, and you're a friend that you trust comes over to your office and he just kind of traipses into the conference room where you've been working and he takes some photos, that's your friend's fault. And he screwed up. And that guy is facing criminal charges right now. You should like not be friends with him anymore. That's a really big deal. He violated your trust. So I don't, should these lawyers really face sanctions when somebody did something to betray their trust like that? I don't know.
I mean, if it clearly comes out that way that they had no role in it, then I think absolutely not. Like you said, yes, the judge put this all under gag order. And in any criminal case, you're expected to protect that evidence and not just hand it out to the public. But, you know, accidents happen. You want to know how we know accidents happen? The prosecution apparently recorded over some very important interviews before they handed that over to the defense. So no one's perfect. No one's without blame in this entire case. And just to close the loop on that conversation, that's even more troubling to me, is the fact that you have evidence that's now been destroyed that the defendant can't get to that appears to be something that they would have liked to have explored. And I agree with you. No way the judge is going to dismiss this case. No way.
No.
Two murdered children, the entire country watching. No way. And so what will she do? She'll say, I'll allow you to get into it on cross-examination. And that's just not a sufficient answer. I'm sure they're going to have a field day with it and talk about how inept this investigation was and blah, 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 blah. But that to me, I don't know if that is a satisfactory remedy for all of this.
But Josh, also, I mean, you were a prosecutor. You're now a defense attorney. They should have, even if it's on tape or whatever they were using, a CD, a digital recorder, there should still have been a written record, whether it was a summary or a written transcript of that to accompany the recording.
I am sure someone took notes. At the bare minimum, someone's
notes,
got some notes.
Notes stink. I want a transcript.
Right.
You're supposed
to
hand that over to like some typist person at the sheriff's office or the whatever, and they're supposed to transcribe this and make sure that, I mean, that's what I've seen in cases where there's something like, I mean, I thought that's how it worked, is that you're supposed to have both, but maybe I'm wrong. I mean, they do it different in Indiana, I mean, you're throwing this guy into maximum security prison when he's not even been convicted of a crime. Give me a break. This whole thing is just a hot mess.
and like we've been saying, this is not a small case for that department. So you would imagine they would be taking extra efforts to make sure they're doing everything right. And if that means you take the audio recording and immediately hand it over to have somebody transcribe it, you go ahead and do that. But you don't wait years and then find out that the thing got destroyed and you don't have a backup, like you said. It's a mess. End of story. You put it best. The whole thing is a mess. And it's, you know, apparently going to go to trial sometime this year. We'll see. I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more about that case before it actually gets inside of a courtroom. Finally, we turn to Miami, Florida, where the parents of an OnlyFans model who was charged with her boyfriend's murder found themselves in hot water last week after authorities arrested the pair in connection with the case. Courtney Clenny, who was arrested in August of 2022, stands accused of fatally stabbing her boyfriend, Christian Obamseli, in the midst of a heated argument. Now her mother, Deborah Clenny, and father, Kim Clenny, have been charged with unauthorized use of a computer for their alleged misuse of a laptop owned by the victim. Prosecutors claim the parents gained access to the computer, which was not collected in investigators' initial sweep, in an attempt to conceal evidence. An attorney for Clenny's claims that the charges are without merit, alleging that prosecutors are attempting to control the narrative by preventing the parents from speaking ahead of a gag order hearing this week. Clenny has now been charged with computer-related offenses along with the second-degree murder charge she was already facing. However, Clenny's defense maintains that the victim's stabbing was an act of self-defense, claiming that the relationship was tumultuous and alleging that her boyfriend was abusive. The parents have bonded out on custody while their daughter remains behind bars ahead of her trial. And Jeanette, what is going on here? Is this parents doing all that they can to protect their daughter, or is this something far more nefarious in your view?
Well, it certainly doesn't look good. trying to get passwords to get into somebody's computer to look for things that might be incriminating to your daughter. It looks terrible. And I'm sure that every parent would want to do whatever they could to help their daughter. But when you start talking about something like this, it's very, very serious. And they were kind of texting, according to the prosecution, the lawyers for Courtney Clenny, trying to find passwords and things like that. So, I mean... The lawyers for Courtney Clenny, and I've interviewed them. I've also interviewed the attorneys representing the Abamsali family. And this is going to be a very contentious case. I mean, both sides are pointing the finger at the other. Both will say this was a toxic relationship between Courtney and Christian, and these two should not have been together. And they argued, they fought. One says the other was abusive to the other. And that, you know, Courtney's claiming she was defending herself, but Christian's family says, no, she was the abuser the entire time. And we see all these tapes and everything of her. You know, I don't think we've seen anything of him. I've not seen anything of him abusing her, but her attorneys claim they're going to present evidence of him being abusive at her trial. This is not a good look. This is not good. I mean, because at trial, they're going to say, She and her parents were kind of working together to possibly destroy evidence of her wrongdoing. Yeah. So I don't know if every parent goes to this length when their daughter is charged with a crime. I do know that, and if you read the complaint, Courtney did call her mother, apparently after Christian was stabbed. So the prosecution is saying that looks, you know, that's a bad fact for Courtney. So I don't know. I think we'll have to wait and see how this plays out.
Who else is she going to call, by the way? I mean, that's not super shocking to me. Oh, I see what you're saying. her first call wasn't to get help.
You stab him, but don't call your mom. Call 911.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, you bring up the point, Anjanette, that there is at least, I've seen video that's making the rounds on the internet of her, what looks to be pretty violently going after him inside of an elevator. And I think the point being not so much that they had this tumultuous and perhaps even physically violent relationship, but he looks like he's not really responding to much of it, which might build itself into the prosecution's case. We'll wait to see if the defense has evidence to show otherwise, which they claim. Again, I'm so happy that we have you on this show, because you do have access, having interviewed all of the people involved in all of this. One of the things that we're hearing about, arguments being made by her team, is that this was a shared computer. And that's an interesting point to me. If it's a computer they both use, then it's not like they're inappropriately accessing something unless they're going on there to destroy stuff and wipe it. What are your thoughts?
Well, if they're going on there to destroy items that could be evidence, then that is definitely bad. It's all about their intent.
Yeah, and end of story, period. That's a crime. But if they don't, if they're allowed to have access, the simple accessing of it, is that a crime?
Well, I don't think access. I mean, if she's saying, "Mom and Dad, I need you to get into this laptop because I need you to get my banking information," that's one thing. If they're going on there, according to what I read, the complaint from the state, and I'm sure the defense could say, "Well, they're just cherry picking, whatever." You know, they were trying to actively get into this laptop, and they're asking Courtney's defense attorneys for possible passwords, and they're like, "We don't have anything." It's all about why they were trying to get on the computer. That's going to be the question. And apparently there are text messages discussing this. So the question is, Why were they trying to get in there, and what was their intent?
And did they have a right to get in there as well? I mean, if that is clearly his property, then, you know, murder case or not, they're essentially trying to break into someone else's property, which is a crime in itself. So, I mean, it was whatever happened, it's enough that the prosecution made an arrest. So that's pretty unheard of territory to start arresting the parents of people.
Kind of like in the Crumbly case.
I was just going to say, not entirely unheard of, but we're apparently seeing a trend. But my last kind of point on this was the gag order in this case. As a reporter, it seems to me we're seeing this happen more and more, where prosecutors are asking for these gag orders in these high profile cases, and they're saying, you know, media access becoming what it has become, we have to protect the sanctity of this case and the integrity of the trial. But it is creating this kind of trend, at least in my view, of cases where we really don't know what's going on because no one's able to talk. What are your thoughts, especially as a reporter who covers this stuff?
I really cannot stand gag orders. I think they're obnoxious. I think that if you have, and I know it's funny because in the Idaho case, Judge, and that's his name, Judge John Judge, Judge says, well, it's not a gag order. It's a non-dissemination order. And I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, right.
Nobody's talking because of the order that they agreed right to. But anyway, and I like Judge, you know, I think he's pretty level-headed guy, but I do not like them. I think that attorneys hide behind these when they don't want to answer questions. I get that they want to preserve a defendant's right to a fair trial. But at the same time, I think that these are used by attorneys at times when they just don't want to deal with the press or they don't want to put information out there. They can still talk. This is what drives me crazy about gag orders, because the first time I ever encountered a gag order on a case was back in 2006. The lawyers could talk to us, but the prosecutor had held this outrageous press conference that ticked everybody off. You know, it was just too graphic, released all this graphic information that was in a criminal complaint, shouldn't have done it, should have held a press conference, but not gone into all this detail, right? So they were allowed to still talk to us about filings or to clarify information like, okay, this is a motion to do this or a motion to do that. They just didn't want them going on TV and granting all these interviews and saying all these different things about the case in advance of the trial. That's a totally different thing. But I think that it is very difficult to report on a case when you have attorneys, prosecutors and defense attorneys are like, but there's a gag order, so we can't say anything, or a non-dissemination order, so I can't say anything. Well, that is not entirely true. I mean, as long as you're not out there on the courthouse steps or whatever, making prejudicial extrajudicial statements about the defendant or the prosecution's case, I think that you should still be able to talk a little bit. And so I think that these things go to the extreme, and sometimes both sides use them and they hide behind them just because they don't want to deal with the press. That's just my opinion. And I think it's obnoxious. It drives me nuts.
I agree with you in your overall point that I think they're being overused and that they can become obnoxious. And the other thing they do is they tend to ironically, sometimes promote bad information because some rumor will get out there and there's no one to really correct it. And now everybody's kind of running on this speculation of stuff that they found on the internet, and none of it proves to be true. And I can understand.
It turns into anonymous sources, right? You get information from these anonymous sources, and it's like, okay. Yeah. Which anonymous sources? Because there have been cases where I've seen some anonymous source information that later turned out to be not true. It was false.
Right.
So I think that it breeds that as well. It breeds misinformation.
Yeah. And, but at the same time, I can understand that, you know, we live in an age where just people have so much access to information, and you don't want a jury pool that is completely, you know, tainted before they're even picked. And you also don't want your current sitting jurors to just be inundated with so much coverage that they can't avoid it even if they try to.
Right.
But at the same time, I mean, part of our system is that it is open. It is, we do pull back the curtain. We do want to hear what people are, you know, what's going on in the minds of the defense team and the prosecution. But I agree with you. I don't know. I just think a more balanced approach rather than these kind of hardline approaches these judges seem to be taking. No?
No, I think that there has to be a balance. Yeah. There should be a balance. And I think it's gotten worse with social media. Okay, and I get that. Everybody's got a cell phone. They get push alerts. They see stuff on these Facebook groups or what have you. But at the same time, Josh, I mean, I don't know how many times I've sat through jury selection and jurors have said stuff like, well, I don't really believe what I see on the news. And frankly, who's watching the local news every night anymore? Nobody. Nobody's doing that. Yeah. I mean, no offense to my friends who work in local news, but look at a rating sheet. Nobody's watching anymore. So everything's coming in on your cell phone or you're on a Reddit group or what have you. So it's just a different, it's different delivery these days.
Yeah. And I, despite our efforts, unless you're going to lock people in a room without a cell phone for the entire duration of the trials, that it's going to happen, especially on these super high profile cases.
But Josh, can you even imagine sequestering a jury these days? They would revolt.
Oh, there's no way.
There is no way.
They would just, you know what they would do? They would just not show up and then threaten the judge, you know, dare the judge to actually lock them up for it. No, there's no way.
You're going
to
take my cell phone away? That's like my third arm. No. Yeah. For like 4 weeks? No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, interesting topic. Her case is likely going to go to trial sometime this year. We will, of course, keep our eyes on that and update everyone as things develop. But in the meantime, that is our show. And Jeanette, thank you again so much for coming on this week. Where can people find out more about you?
Well, I'm on Twitter at @AnnJeanette5. I'm on Instagram at @AnnJeanette. And I host Crime Fix. It's a daily crime show every day on Law and Crime's YouTube channel. So there you have it.
And I've checked it out and I've been a guest on it.
You've been a guest. You're a great guest.
Thank you. It's a fabulous show and everybody should definitely check it out. You do a wonderful job. In the meantime, I'm your host, Josh Ritter. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at, and yes, now even TikTok at Joshua Ritter ESQ. Or as always at joshuaritter.com. You can find our sidebar episodes wherever you get your podcasts. And we want to hear from you. If you've got questions or comments or even future guests you'd like to hear from, tweet us your comments with the hashtag TCD Sidebar. And thank you again for joining us at the True Crime Daily Sidebar.